This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. This is our thought leader segment hosted by Ali Mwakaneno Gakweli. And today I am sitting with Billy Owino, who is the CEO of TransUnion Kenya. And we want to talk about the lending space, specifically how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected lending. What are some of the trends that we've observed in that sector and how companies like TransUnion are playing a leading role in providing data that helps lenders reach more customers and still balance their risk. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Thank you. Thank you, Ali, for having me.
So maybe to begin the conversation, Billy, what are some of the trends in access to credits pre-COVID-19 and that we've seen that might have been affected, say, by the pandemic? And maybe what are some of the things that we can expect after? So looking at credit pre-COVID-19, during the pandemic and after.
Thanks for that question. I think, this is a really good time to compare, you know, what are some of the differences we've seen so far during the pandemic and pre-pandemic. And I think a couple of things really come into play. What we know is that the Kenyan market had been growing prior to the pandemic in terms of access to credit, mainly in the private sector. Yeah, so private sector growth had been growing decently well pre-pandemic. What we know historically is that we had gone through a depressed period in terms of growth of credit to consumers and businesses, around about 2016-17 up to 2018, especially when we had the zero rating or when we had the interest rates capped at some point. And that affected, of course, growth of credit to the private sector, which is consumers and businesses. Yeah. However, 2019 was a fairly good year, because I think prior to that, growth of credit was sitting at about between 4% and 5% year on year. And in 2019, this jumped to over 7%. Yeah. So we saw quite a healthy growth in, growth of credit to the consumers. But anyway, as you know, the story so far, this kind of like got curtailed or slowed down heavily post-pandemic. Yeah. Now, a number of things were driving the fairly decent growth of credit prior to that. One was the banks focusing a lot on digital lending. So digital lending was a big driver in terms of access to credit. We know that most of the key or the main players in the banking sector, especially the tier one banks, yeah, they all launched digital lending solutions, which really expanded the base that was having access to especially transactional credit. Trade finance also had been growing very, very well. Credit to small businesses, especially. 2019 was quite a year that we had seen some decent growth in that sector. And then vehicle asset finance was, growing well. Yeah? And where the banks were focusing on was both in terms of unsecured and secured. Both sectors or both aspects of financing were actually doing quite well prior to the pandemic. We know that there's an increase in non-performing loans. I think up until 2019, this had grown to about 12.5% in terms of gross NPLs in the sector, rising from just around about 11%. Yeah. So you had started seeing an increase in non-performing loans, mainly from the digital loans. Digital loans were kind of like a big driver on NPLs in the sector. A bit of trade finance and the SME sector were also driving up NPLs. Yeah? We know that that number has gone up since then. I think when you look at 2020, gross NPLs in the market has risen from just from about 13% to now it's sitting at a high of 14.5%. Yeah, so it's only the highest we've seen in the banking sector in terms of NPLs. So there's an increase in NPLs. Lending to the sector was depressed because I think most of the lenders focused on restructuring of facilities in 2020.
You've mentioned a little bit of the rise in NPLs. Of course, we've seen different banks in the country take up a few measures just to help their customers get through the pandemic, with some extending, you know, lending holidays and whatnot. How is the rise in NPLs affecting the banks and, by extension, the general access to credit in the country? And what do you think lenders can do, you know, as we keep seeing the different developments in the pandemic, such as, you know, the vaccine?
Yeah, so the rising NPLs, of course, are always kind of like, you know, a worrying thing in the sector, because, I mean, it points to asset quality. Yeah? Any deterioration in asset quality in the industry doesn't bode well for the sector. Yeah? One thing I have to say, though, is that if you look at the basics of the financial sector, especially the banking sector, it's very healthy. You know, cash liquidity ratios for the bank are well above 50%, which is also well above, you know, the recommended rate by the central bank. So the basics are there, the fundamentals are really right. Yeah. However, deteriorating asset quality ratio, we find that, you know, it puts the stress on lenders in terms of how much they can open their books, because, you know, rising NPLs, of course, points to stress in the market. Yeah, customers are not paying. We know there's major sectors that were heavily affected during the pandemic. The hospitality was heavily affected, especially in the first year of the pandemic. Yeah, hospitality, travel and tourism, real estate, quite a bit of that was heavily affected. Yeah, now with rising NPLs, mainly driven by that sector, and of course, pointing to a general stress in the market. It therefore means that lenders have to be more careful. They have to really look at, you know, tighten their rules in terms of their lending policies, which, you know, translates to a slowdown in terms of access to credit. Yeah. So whilst the lenders were initially bullish, the market fundamentals were looking good, lenders were fairly paying well. But that jump in NPL, of course, it has meant that lenders have had to take a stricter view and less risky view in terms of who they're lending to. So it's focusing mainly on the perceived good customers, on reducing lending on sectors that are still viewed as risky or still heavily impacted, or consumers who have still been heavily impacted. So we'll see definitely, and we've already seen it, a drop in terms of lending to some of these risky sectors that have been impacted by the pandemic.
Looking towards more of what's going to happen, rather, what we expect after the pandemic, rather as the pandemic goes on, one of the roles which data from companies like TransUnion plays is balancing risk, especially from lenders. What would be the best way you would recommend in which lenders can navigate, you know, fraud, identity theft, and loan stacking, of course, as we walk out of the pandemic?
So I think the key thing that as TransUnion, you know, working with our partners in the financial sector are really focusing on at the moment, is we know that this is a period they need to protect their books. That's normally the key thing, number one, is to protect your books, look at the quality of your asset, be able to collect better in terms of collecting. But at the same time, they still need to lend, yeah? Be able to lend better, use data better to lend, while at the same time looking for new opportunities, but in a very strategic way. Yeah? So it's a couple of things. Protect your book or portfolio. Look for growth opportunities, but very strategic and very targeted, because, you know, it's still messy out there. Yeah? We are still in the middle of the pandemic. And then the third piece is really collect better, manage delinquencies in a better way, in a proactive way. Yeah? And that's really where we come in as TransUnion, is across the life cycle. What we're doing in this space and working with lenders is to help them really figure out better use of data, yeah, because use of data is going to be very, very critical going forward. And number one, on the existing customers, to help them protect their books. And I'll tell you what that means. And just to help you appreciate that fact, if you look at it in the first year of the pandemic, remember that lenders they restructured about 57% of their book in the banking sector, yeah? Which was a huge amount, about 1.7 trillion shillings that was restructured. Now, a key common component of that, well, that's where use of data comes in and how TransUnion is helping lenders in that space, is to help them, you know, be able to monitor their books. So out of this 1.7 million book value that has been restructured of the customers who have taken up restructuring, they use data from us to help them, you know, monitor those books, you know, who's looking like they're coming out of stress, what is the data saying about them, is there an opportunity to open up and start lending to them better because the data is showing that they're now more capable, either in terms of how they're transacting or the facilities or disposable income, or on the other side, who's looking like they're still under distress, what is the data saying, and how can you extend better facilities to them or even manage them proactively before they go into delinquency. So offer them maybe additional payment holidays, offer them other, you know, facilities that can help them reduce the exposure through maybe things like loan consolidation. So that's one thing we do with the lenders, just in terms of managing the existing books. Yeah? And the ones that are looking for new opportunities to grow, again, data comes in very handy. And the data can point them. So if they look at, so a couple of things, look at their book and, you know, their risk appetite, look at the trends in the market. Because remember, at TransUnion, we have the total 360 view of the trends in the market. Yeah. Which are the products that are growing well? Which are the products that are less risky? Is it credit cards? Is it digital loans? Is it trade credit? So you're able to provide to the industry insights, and very timely insight that you get on a monthly basis that can help the lenders figure out markets that they can still lend to within their risk appetite without exposing themselves to more risk. Yeah. So that's another area that we help the lenders on. And then the third piece is on collections. And collections is an interesting one because, you know, we've talked about, you know, non-performing loans are going up into delinquency, which is, of course, you know, coming out of this pandemic and the stress that it has put on customers in terms of paying. So lenders also need to be more efficient and more targeted when it comes to collecting. Yeah? And I'll tell you what that means and how data comes in again and how we're helping the sector is to really give them the right tools to determine who really has the potential to pay back a facility. Yeah. Because let's take Bank A. Bank A has 100 customers who have gone into default. Huh? Now, with their own view of the data of their customers, they don't know out of these 100 who they should target on in terms of focusing on for their loan efforts. Maybe the data out there or the 360 view of that customer would show that customer five, for example, looks like the one that was most likely to repay a loan because they seem to have paid off another facility elsewhere, so they've got more disposable income. They seem to have picked on new other facilities. So maybe they've got additional sources of income that's allowing them to pick up new facilities. So we are using data to model and say, out of these 100 customers that we have, or you as Bank A has, don't call them from number one to 100, but be targeted. The data shows that maybe it's only 20 of these that you can collect from efficiently at this time. So focus on those 20. And focus your efforts elsewhere in terms of who you're going to collect on. So we're helping in collections and providing the data that tells you that. But then you mentioned a key point, which is also on onboarding the right customers and preventing fraud. Statistics have shown that since the pandemic started, fraud in the digital space has gone up quite a bit. And this is globally, yeah? digital space, financial sector, attempted fraud has gone up across the board. And it's just because, you know, with digital acceleration, you can always be sure that there'll be fraud that comes with that. Yeah. So we've got solutions in the industry that we've launched the last couple of months, and it's digital onboarding solutions, which helps really lenders to be sure who they're onboarding if they're bringing a new customer on board in terms of fraud, preventing fraud in that space when you're onboarding a new customer digitally. Because now we know that a lot of lenders are focusing on not having to bring in, or you don't have to walk into a bank to open an account. Yeah. If you're going to do all that onboarding digitally, then we help you solve for fraud in that space. We help you solve for fraud in terms of when your customers are transacting, which devices are they using? Are the devices flagged elsewhere as having been involved in fraud? So we're able to help lenders even see the devices that the customers are using. And
Have the devices been flagged elsewhere?
Yes. So in terms of device, because remember, with the move to digital, there's a device always involved. Yeah, it could be a smartphone. You're using your lender's app. It could be a computer. You're doing online banking. So we've got a solution called iOvation, which is a global solution. It maintains a database of devices across the globe. The ones that have been flagged for fraudulent cases, fraudulent attempts. So we help lenders in terms of looking at not just risk from onboarding the individual, assessing and knowing that Billy is Billy, that is just transacting on my platform, is the right customer, but also the device risk. So lenders can be able to see if a device has been used in fraudulent cases elsewhere, and be able to then take that into account when they are transacting their customers. So it's those four components that we're really helping our lenders with to really help them. Number one, lend better, protect their books, collect better, but also solve for fraud at the same time.
Again, with the move to digital, maybe let me spin this off a little bit. Of course, we can both agree that lenders, especially in the Kenyan economy, have such a pivotal role to play in recovery, given the reliance towards lenders like banks as sources of funding in Kenya compared to other markets, which largely rely on the capital markets. What are some of the new data points that TransUnion has maybe adopted that has or will enhance credit as the economy recovers?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Ali, and it's a critical one that as an industry we need to talk about. And it's really down to, you know, as the financial sector, the lending sector, banking sector, or fintechs, how can we use data to lend better? Yeah, that's a really, really critical piece. Now, we know that using data can unlock lending to consumers and businesses without even increasing your risk exposure. Yeah? And what you mean by that is that one of the reasons why we've not really had a strong growth in terms of access to credit is because, remember, lending is, you look at risk, yeah? You look at the probability of default. Can this person pay me back, yeah? Now, because we have still relied on just traditional views of the customer at the point where we're accessing them, it's been maybe a lender looking at, you know, internally, what's my view of Billy if he's my existing customer? How has he been repaying the loans previously? Does he have an asset that I can hold on to in case something goes wrong? Or does he have a salary? Yeah, something. Or what's his income? That's kind of like the traditional view that the industry has always used in terms of lending. Yeah, but now you start hearing of things like risk-based pricing, which the central bank has been pushing since last year, and it should really kick in towards the end of this year, full force. As to say, listen, we've, since 2012, we've been collecting data on consumers and how they're repaying and building scorecards on that, yeah? And, you know, having a credit score is like having a financial CV, if I can call it that, yeah? That's really to say, you know, this is Billy. This is how I've been borrowing and paying back. I borrow on time. Sometimes I borrow even before time is up. I've never missed on my payments. And I've built a really good credit score. For us, the top credit score is an AA score. Yeah? But unfortunately, in the sector today, what's been happening is that we approached a one-size-fits-all, where regardless of you, Ali, building a good credit score, and me, Billy, having a poor credit score because I missed some payments, stuff like that. But we end up being charged the same interest rate, for example, if you're applying for the same facility or getting the same terms, yeah? So you really lose out, Ali, on your side on having built up a really good credit profile because the benefits don't really accrue to you, yeah? Now, that's what now the industry, the regulators say, central bank is pushing, and the banks and us are working together with them in that sector to say, you know, those who maintain a good profile, good credit history, they need to be rewarded for it. They should get better terms. If Billy was going to be asked for a security for that facility, and me and you asking for the same facility, they won't ask you for a security because you've got a better credit profile. It shows that you're better. Yeah? So you get better terms. You get better credit, interest rates. Yeah. So that's one thing that's going to be really exciting going forward. And it's built around someone's credit score. And one thing we've done as TransUnion is to continually, you know, relook at our credit scores, our scoring models. It works off the global, you know, standards to ensure that every consumer, be it somebody who's taking a big facility like trade finance or a mortgage, or down to a credit, a digital loan, a mobile loan, everyone gets a credit score. Yeah, and that credit score, you know, we are pushing it out to the banks. All the lenders have adopted it now, and the next step now will be for them to pick up the credit score and be able to use it when they're assessing you and reward the good ones. But at the same time, the ones who are risky, don't deny them, because the industry practice has been towards more of a cutoff system where we say anybody below maybe the GG score, which is viewed as risky, just cut it off. Don't lend it to them. But with better use of data and credit scoring models, you could say, okay, we're not going to deny your facility. We'll give you a loan, but it would be at higher interest rate, for example, yeah? So you've still been able to lend, but also change your terms to be able to cover yourself instead of denying the person a loan, so, which I think will be really good for the industry, yeah? The second piece, which is a solution you're very excited about in terms of data points you're making available to lenders now, is what we call, and allow me to just dive into this a little bit and explain why it would be really important, is what you call a trended view, yeah? To be able to provide a trended view of a customer over a period of time. Yeah? And I'll tell you what that means. So remember in the first piece, we talked about a score. And a score is to say, I've checked on Ali at this time, I've checked on Billy at this time, they've got two different scores, yeah? And it's a snapshot, a score view, at a particular point in time, which is good. Already shows, you know, how you stand in terms of your financial CV, if you can call it that, yeah? Now, the next iteration of that, which is something we've launched in the market as a trended score, is to say, assuming case scenario, Ali, you and me both have a credit score of, say, 600 points. That's what our credit score is. So we all, you know, if you look at it on the outset, any lender who's looking at it might say, oh, okay, these guys have the same credit risk score. Yeah? Because remember, credit score is really just looking at your probability to default. You know, what's the likelihood of you defaulting? And it looks at your history in the past 24 months. Yeah, so that's really what it does. So if we pull our scores at the same time today, me and you, and the lender is looking at us, let's assume you're applying for the same facility. It will look like we're the same, yeah? So you might end up getting the same terms because our credit scores are the same, yeah? However, with the trended view, we go an extra mile and even give better insights to the lender to say, guess what? Ali, who is at a 600 today, 6 months ago, he was at 400 and something. So in the last 6 months, he's actually been slowly building up his credit profile. He's getting better and better and better, yeah? because, you know, the higher the score, the better your credit profile is. So he's moved from maybe 400 to 600 in the last 6 months. He's paying off his loans in time. He's reduced his exposure. He's not picking up on too many facilities, so he's also not over indebted. So it's getting better, yeah? And then Billy, in the meantime, has dropped from, let's say, 700 to 600. So he's taking on more debt. He started missing his installment payments. He's showing signs of distress. So there's something happening. His score is dropping, yeah? So then that suddenly changes the story, because we are no longer the same again. You cannot be viewed as the same. In fact, the lender would be more inclined to lend to you, Ali, who's been building up your profile the last 6 months, than me, Billy, who's been actually dropping in terms of my credit folder and becoming riskier. Yeah? So whilst we're all 600, suddenly the story changes because of the trended view, being able to look at how I've been performing the last 6 months. And you can now be able to tell, aha, I'm willing to put my money on Ali, who's been improving his credit score and doing better than Billy, who also looks like him. They're also at 600, but then he's deteriorating. Yeah, and I think that's going to be a really powerful tool to the sector. Lenders have tried it. They're very happy with what they're seeing, because now it allows them to even have better insight at the point of lending. Instead of just a snapshot view, is really to have a historical trended view and really know who they can put their money on in terms of the point of lending. That same report also comes in handy when it comes to portfolio management. Yeah, with portfolio management, this is where lenders review on a monthly basis and to say, how are the customers we've extended loans to performing? Yeah, on a month-to-month basis. Yeah, that's what's called portfolio management. how are they performing? Are there any ones that are looking like they could be under stress? Are there any ones who are looking like they are performing well and are even ready for better facilities, loan consolidations, or upsell into other facilities? Maybe they only have a personal loan with me, but, you know, the data tells me I can also give them a vehicle asset finance or a mortgage because they're doing well. No? So with portfolio management and trended view, those two also come in together very well, because on a monthly basis, you can also see how someone is trending. Yeah. Now, in my case, where I've been dropping the last 6 months, they'll pick it up when they do the portfolio management exercise with us. And the data will tell them that, listen, something is happening with Billy. He's under stress, or something is going wrong. His score is dropping. He's getting over indebted. So proactively manage him before he goes into default. Now that's really, really critical, because, you know, instead of what's been happening today, where lenders end up with surprises, one day I just go into default, I'm not able to pay. But if they had picked it up 6 months, 3 months earlier, they could have put in, you know, treatment strategies, because they could have seen that my score is dropping. My facilities are becoming more and more. I'm looking around, shopping around elsewhere because I'm over indebted. They could have put in treatment strategies to really help me manage that before I go into default. Yeah. And which is really going to be good for the lenders, because now it puts the power in their hands in how they can proactively manage their customers. And not only come in when it's the surprise of somebody has gone into default, or the arrears have built up, which is something that's going to be really critical for the lenders going forward. And we're excited to introduce it in the market.
Billy, I'm happy you talked about, you know, customized lending terms based on, of course, risk assessment. But to that, I have a question, which is, hey, to people out there who, because see, we're building a credit rating based on someone's previous exposure to lending institutions, aren't we? How best can people who have not been previously exposed to lending institutions, maybe because they don't have a need or they're just not there yet, build their credit score such that when they start, or rather when they do need such kind of financial assistance, they're in a good place? A second part to that question would be, in most cases, the risk rating of a customer simply looks at their ability to repay. What are some of the proactive ways organizations like TransUnion can also gauge the willingness to repay a loan, such that it's a more comprehensive risk rating beyond just the ability?
Okay, yeah, thanks, Ali. Let me start with this second part, if that's okay. the second part of the question, because I think it will segue into the first piece, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So no, you're right. I think a key thing to focus on, especially in a market like ours, where you know, there's still data is still limited in terms of credit data. I mean, it comes up, you know, like you say, in the first part of your question, it's a lending activity, be it from the formal financial sector with the banks and the likes, or to, you know, SACOs, as long as it's reported, digital lending. One thing we've seen is that mobile lending has really expanded the base quite a lot. Yeah. Just to put it into perspective, we now have about, 13 going to 14 million credit active consumer profiles in our base. And almost 70% of these have come into the credit sharing ecosystem through mobile loans, yeah? Not your traditional bank loans, yeah? So mobile loans, digital lending has really been a massive driver in terms of expanding the base of customers who have built a credit profile, yeah? And that points to something that we are focusing on as TransUnion, and the industry at large is focusing on, is to really say there's more alternative data out there. So how do we bring in that alternative data into the fold? Yeah? And the reality is there's a lot of alternative data on consumers that can also be used to build, to even improve on the richness of their credit profile. Yeah? So we're saying we've moved from your traditional credit, which is your bank loans, you know, vehicle asset finance, mortgages, the likes, SACOs have come into the fold. That's even going to get better this year once, because the law was changed to mandate all the SACOs to report to the Bureau. So that's going to even improve MFBs. But the massive jump we saw was when we started getting mobile lending data coming in, you know, your MSureis, your Talas, KCB M-Pesa, that's really enriched the base quite a bit, yeah? But there's still more. There's still a lot out there that we're trying to harness, working with the telcos, working with other fintechs who are already out there harnessing more data. And I'll give you a good example, yeah? A good example is if you look at the agricultural sector, in terms of access to credit, we know that agricultural sector is one of the most underserved. Yeah, they don't get a lot of access to credit. I mean, the agricultural sector only accounts for 3.2% of the loan portfolio lending to the consumer and the private sector. Yeah, which is a very small portion if you think about it, because we are primarily an agricultural society. Yeah, I think the agricultural sector accounts for quite a big chunk of our population. Yeah, but in terms of access to credit, they're only getting 3.2%. Now, one of the biggest challenges there is because agricultural sector is viewed as risky. Yeah? But, you know, a lot of organizations now have come into that space and they're trying to digitize the data, make the data structured and usable in a way that an organization like us, TransUnion, who build credit scores, can consume that data and help to build a credit score on a farmer who maybe have never taken a loan, but they have a lot of other activity out there that can still be used to build their credit or be used to assess them in terms of their probability to default on how well they can pay back. It's the output, you know, the whole value chain, how much they're sending. He might be sending 10 liters of milk every day to his collection point. He's paid for it. He takes farm implements or farm inputs on a regular basis from his local SACO, and he pays back on time. He delivers food in the market, gets paid for it, but that is not never really captured. It's still very unstructured. Yeah, he has paid school fees, you know, for his 6 children all the way through high school. Never defaulted on school fees. Yeah, but that record is somewhere. So what I'm saying is that harnessing alternative data is really going to be the next big phase, and we're already involved in that space. We've started testing and trying a few of the data that is coming through And that's what we're going to focus on a lot, also partnering with telcos. You know, your mobile operators like the Safaricoms, Airtel, and look at, you know, working with the fintechs, foundations like Mastercard Foundation is active in that space, Visa, is to pull together that unstructured data that is already existing out there and use that to build better consumer profiles over and above what we have today. So that's a key piece for us. Yeah, alternative data is going to be really big, and we've started work on that. Yeah. And then on your first question around building profiles, I would say if you're not borrowing, don't borrow just for the sake of it. Take credit only if you know what you're going to do with it. Yeah. So if you're somebody, however, unfortunately today, you'll only start building a credit profile if you take a loan. Yeah. What mobile lending has done is that it has almost put the ability to take a loan on everyone's hands. Yeah. So don't shy away from it. What I'd want to encourage consumers is don't shy away from taking a loan, because it helps you build a consumer, a good profile. But use it wisely. Use it for what you want to use it for, and use that to build a credit profile. Even a mobile loan can help somebody build a good credit score, because it is a credit that is being captured. Yeah, so don't shy away from that, but only use it well. We've got a service called Nipashe, which any consumer can access today on their mobile phone, and it allows them to be able to access their credit profile, see how it's performing. That 500 shillings loan that I took on maybe Mshwari or Tala and paid back on time, how is it affecting my credit profile? Yeah, they can have a view of that using a product called Nipashe, which anyone can get on their mobile phone today to get a credit profile. Yeah, so don't shy away from a loan, but use it for a good purpose, but it will help you build a credit profile. It's not the other way that if I've not taken a loan, I have a good credit profile. No, because if you're not taking a loan, a lender cannot be able to see or assess whether you can pay back because you've never taken. But if you've taken and you're paying back, they'll be able to assess you, and that's what a credit profile is all about.
A follow-up question as we slowly approach the end of the interview is, with the massive amount of data, especially accessed by lenders in the fintech space, also comes with the responsibility to protect the data of the borrowers and to use it in ways that follow regulation and are also ethical, which has not always been the case, especially in our markets. We've had concerns in the general public that some lenders would sort of step out of the mandate in which they're supposed to use the data, especially when it comes to collection, to contact, for example, people listed in the phone book of a customer with a loan. What are some of the recommendations that you would have in terms of how lenders, especially mobile lenders, can better handle the data of their borrowers? And what are some of the recommendations you'd have for the regulator, if you don't mind?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Ali, and that's a really, really critical discussion to have at this time. Because remember, we need to, especially digital, the more we go digital, and the reality is, and from what I've shared, you know, 70% of the consumers who are coming on online in terms of being credit active today are through digital platforms, yeah? Meaning that we are getting more and more active digitally, which means there's a lot of information that we're also sharing out there that's been harnessed to open up lending to us, yeah? Now, I think a couple of things are really key now. And I think the first one really sits at the center of this is consumer awareness and education. Yeah, is something that is really, really key. It's something that the industry can no longer wish away. It has to sit at the heart of what everyone does, be it a bank, be it a fintech, a SACO. We have to educate our consumers on what their rights are. That responsibility now has to sit with anyone who's lending, to take it upon themselves to educate their consumers on, number one, what does checking credit involve? How can you manage it? How can you use it better? It's something that lenders cannot wish away. They have to include it in all their processes. Yeah. We know it becomes difficult when it comes to digital lending because you don't deal face to face with anybody. You go into a mobile phone, sign up, take a loan and go and move on. Yeah. But lenders can no longer wish away the responsibility to educate their consumers. In that also, we have to educate our consumers, everyone of the consumers on their rights. Yeah. The Data Protection Act has come into place. Really critical. It was about time. We are really, really supportive of it because it is necessary to be there, especially where we know that, you know, the industry has already morphed towards where it's use of your digital profile, your digital data, and how it's being used. Yeah. So we have to educate consumers on, you know, the Data Protection Act, how I'm going to use your data, and what your rights are. Everybody needs to know that. Yeah. Because unfortunately, we've seen cases, and I think you alluded to that, where because of lack of that consumer education and what their rights are, some digital lenders have picked on somebody's, you know, data, because then they're looking for the money. And you know, at some point when you're looking for money, you're desperate, you want that money, you say yes to everything. But what you're saying yes to is going to be used either to harass you, harass your contacts, your relatives, at the point of, you know, maybe when they're doing collection, which is really unscrupulous, yeah? So it's very critical that consumers know what their rights are, how their data is being used, and also their right of refusal, the right to say, I don't give you my data, I cannot give you my data, and they have that right, yeah? And also how to raise disputes. So in case of a dispute, where can I go to if my data has not been used properly? If a digital lender is using my data to, number one, expose me or harass other people who are associated with me, you have a right to raise a dispute, which is through the Data Protection Commissioner. How do you access that? So you need to educate them. So the regulator needs to really come into that play. All the regulators have to work together, Central Bank, Data Protection Commissioner, Competitions Authority. There has to be a very concerted effort, and it should sit around, let's educate our consumers, let's protect them, let's also make them aware of the tools available to them in terms of the Data Protection Act. But it is very critical. If we get data protection right, where the data processors, you know, the lenders, the fintechs who are using my data to give me a service, yes, but they also take the reference responsibility and know that they cannot just use it anyhow, I think the industry will even grow better, because data will be used better, consumers will have their right on how their data is used, and it will open up just for more innovation, which I think we're very supportive about.
Last question, Billy, again, alluding to the collaboration that you talked about, especially with reference to what the government can do. You know, as we recover from the pandemic again, how can credit scoring organizations work together with lenders in the space, as well as regulators, to ensure that there's favorable data that will allow lenders to extend credits with minimal risk? And on the regulator side, there's favorable policy that will also allow our lenders to lend at favorable rates for both the customers and the institutions.
Cool. Let me start from the consumer perspective. So as an industry, and that's one thing that we are very passionate about as TransUnion, we have to, you know, kind of like tied to what I said initially, make the tools available to consumers to be able to, on the go, view their profiles, understand how their data is being used, what's being reported on them on a monthly basis, and also in case of a dispute or there's wrongful information that has been reported on their credit profile, you know, how they can go about rectifying that. Yeah, because it's really, really critical that consumers know, and unfortunately, they don't know that very well. Many people don't know that if you end up with a default listing, that's not the end of everything. Yeah, I saw a clip where someone said, you know, if you end up in a CRB, that's it, your life is over. Yeah, it's not the case. It's not over. There are mechanisms to rehabilitate yourself. You know, paying off a loan, starting to rebuild that profile. It's a CV. It's a CV you're working on. It doesn't mean that it shows that you failed in this job, you cannot take on another job. Yeah, it's a CV. So what's the process to rebuild your life, to, you know, paying off a loan, getting it running again? How does it affect you? Yeah? So it's not the end of it if you end up with a default listing. And we help. We have a lot of tools on our Nipasha platform, which can be accessed either through you know, SMS 21272 or an app on the Play Store. It's called The Passion. And you'll access tools that can help you figure out, you know, just, you know, how your credit profile is being affected, huh? And what impacts it, how to build a good credit profile. If you're working towards goals, you're a small business and you want to build your profile to the point that you can take a bigger loan, how you can go about that. So we're very passionate about consumer education. We there's an industry initiative going on at the moment through Treasury and the World Bank. It was affected by the pandemic, but it should kick off either towards the end of this year, depending on how COVID situation happens, or next year. We'll kick off a really, really intensive consumer education program. That's going to involve all the lenders, the banks, treasuries involved, all the CRBs. That is to educate the person all the way to the ground on what is a CRB, what happens, is it good or bad to be there? It is good to be there. You can use it well. If case is a problem, this is how you go about it. These are the people you need to contact. You're right. For a lot of people, for example, don't know that the regulation states very clearly, before a lender reports a default on you, they have to give you a 30-day notice. People don't know that. So was the due process followed for you to be listed on the bureau? These are the rights that consumers need to know. Consumers need to know their right to raise a dispute, and it should be looked into. And it has even timelines on what should be followed if you raise a dispute. So all this needs to happen. Yeah. So consumer education is key and awareness. So look out for that campaign coming through. As TransUnion, we continue doing our own awareness campaigns through our social media. So we'll keep on doing that and putting out, you know, just how consumers can take advantage of the passion. So that's one. And then from the industry side, the, you know, the lenders, couple of things. Number one is, yes, you're putting out, you know, tools to help the lenders lend better, to help the lenders use data better and use our solutions to open up credit, but without increasing their risk or risk, you know, risk exposure, which is really, really critical, yeah? And I think if we use data better, I believe, you know, as an industry, we can lend better to SMEs, for example. Yeah, we need to open up lending to SMEs, yeah? There's data there that can help us lend to SMEs better. There's data there that can help us lend to the agricultural sector better, which is really starved of credit, but it's really critical to us, yeah? So my encouragement to all the industry players is, you know, let's continue partnering. Take advantage of the solutions that, as an industry, you're providing. You're not just a data depository. You're not just a listing body, yeah? But that data that is being shared across the industry, take advantage of the solutions that you have that can help you lend better to the consumers and the businesses, because we want to open up, lending to all the sectors to really kickstart back the economies as we recover from the pandemic, yeah? But at the same time, help you protect your books, protect your portfolio, or if you need to collect, also help you collect better, yeah? So that's a key aspect of it in terms of use of data. And then I think for the regulator, we continue engaging with the regulator. We are one of the most forward-looking regulators in the region. They've been very supportive of the initiatives that we've come up with as TransUnion and also the industry, just in terms of these new solutions that you're putting out there, yeah? And they've really been supporting all that. They have been central bank, and really, it's my hat's off to them. They've really supported us very well also in terms of, getting the industry to move towards risk-based pricing and use of cost, yeah? Which is something that's really going to benefit businesses and consumers, where, you know, having a good score will translate to something. You get better facilities, you get better terms in their lending. And that's really been thanks to the regulator really pushing that agenda. They're trying to figure out how to bring more sanity in the digital lending space. So we're continually engaging with the regulator in that space. And I think, going by how it's been handled previously, it will be successful. And I think we are going to see more growth in the digital lending space, but in a really well-structured manner that puts at the heart of everything, you know, consumer protection, and I think it will do very well for us. So it's looking good. I think we've seen signs of recovery. If you look at the first quarter reports, the lenders showed some really good signs of return to profitability. So we are very bullish about how the market is going to look like. And I think, you know, come the end of this year, consumers and businesses should start seeing even more benefits coming out of this sector, just through the new regulations that have been put into place, but also the data that and new solutions that the lenders are going to take advantage of to lend better to the consumers and the businesses.
Thank you so much, Billy. I think this is all I had for today. Thank you for joining this discussion, and looking forward to having more with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ali. Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed the discussion.
All right. To our listeners, that was Billy Owino, who is the CEO of TransUnion in Kenya. And we were just discussing the different trends in lending pre-COVID-19, during the pandemic, and what we can expect after the pandemic, as well as navigating some of the intimate issues in the Kenyan lending space, such as, you know, challenges like fraud, identity theft, and loan stacking, which lenders have continued to face and have been accentuated sort of by the pandemic, as well as how best lenders can use data to extend credit to businesses and individuals. Thank you for joining today's show. My name is Ali Mokanene Gafeli. Goodbye.